Welcome to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goals of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with the chronic illness of sickle cell disease. Today, we are with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey of the Universalist Unitarian Verdugo Church. Do you guys call it church?
We do. We should be changing it to congregation, which might be more encompassing. But for right now, it's the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills.
Ah, it's a lovely place, and it's where I found my people.
We're so glad you're with us.
Yes. So we've spent a bit of time speaking about, or you were speaking out, about things like grief and loss and, I guess, kind of the human state of being without. Does that make sense? Or I guess back to loss. So I thought, well, be great for us, especially this time of year, to talk about that. I kind of think it's the time where I can shake everything off and move on. So I think now is a great time for us to talk about the subject of loss and comfort and, you know, like as we were putting on our sweaters, even here in Southern California, having conversations about things that happened during the year or even in the past and thinking of family, you know, that's here with us and not with us. So I'm just going to let you take it from here and give us your thoughts.
Sure, Adrienne. I'm so glad to be with you. So as we start to look at or to consider the issues that are brought up during this very special season, I think it's imperative that we stay mindful of the fact that while some of us are celebratory and some of us are elated and some of us are grandiose in all of our parties and dinners and events we're planning, that another segment of the human family is in grief. Somebody has lost somebody they love this season, and another somebody is dealing with someone who's in crises, whether it be drug addiction or mental health or a physical ailment, and somebody is homeless and somebody's brokenhearted, and the list goes on and on. So in the midst of all this wonder and beauty and joy of a season, there's the loss, there's the grief, there's bereavement that's going on. And I know for myself, being a cancer survivor, that during a season of joy for many, when you're feeling blue, ooh, it's hard to get through these days.
Well, yeah. I mean, as the listeners know and you know, I lost one of my dearest friends who have, Marissa's friend actually, they'd gone to sickle cell camp together since they were 6 years old. And she spent Christmases here with me and her daughter, and I was just going through the pictures from last year. And it hit me like a wave that I was going to have Christmas this year without her. And I had to, you know, I took the picture out and I thought, well, how can I honor this? So I have to put it in sort of a sacred space and hold her energy with me and her memory with me in a happy space rather than, or a space of gratitude rather than one of loss.
And I hear you, and that's a wonderfully healthy way of dealing with the loss of another soul, of someone that you care about, of someone that you love. And yet, as you probably know, stages of grief and loss and bereavement run in patterns that aren't always like a straight line. And so you may find yourself there looking at the picture and remembering happy times together, and in the next moment, you could be saddened and shed tears. And so this idea of stages of loss and grief that Kubler and Ross worked on so many years ago. The some people deal with the denial that somehow somebody couldn't have be gone or couldn't have broken their heart or they couldn't have left me or the anger that comes sometimes or the bargaining. I remember so clearly the day my grandmother died, I tried to cut a deal with the devil. I said, "Devil, if you give my mama one more day, you could take 10 years of my life. Please let me see my mama up and well again." And so that bargaining that we do sometimes. And of course, depression can take over for so many people. It just can cloud everything we do. And I'm prayerful. See, I believe in the power of prayer. I'm prayerful that we all can come to a place of acceptance and deal with the losses and even the grief, because I found in a life filled with ups and downs that I never could experience the great joys I've had in life if I hadn't known some of the deep sorrows I've had. It kind of frames the entirety of an emotional life for me. What can be at one end of a spectrum actually has led me to the other end of the spectrum, where I try to reside most frequently in the acceptance and joy of it all, because I'm powerless over most of these things, especially the comings and goings of another human being.
So this powerlessness, I mean, it is human, right? I mean, I've been reading, these books are filled with writings from people of all cultures and time periods, and that sort of loss seems to be a very human state. And we've developed some ways, as you said, of kind of coping mechanisms for them. It seems like definitely like writing poetry or lyrics for songs. Even there are certain ritualistic prayers. It seems that there has been a human historical effort to help us overcome. I don't even know if overcome is that. Is maybe express these feelings of loss and grief, and I want to say overcome, but maybe it's not really you're overcoming it. Maybe it's doing just as you said. Maybe it's stages where you pass through the process. It's not a matter of having to overcome the loss.
Yeah, I think we have to pass through. You know, in different cultures or spiritualities, they will even have worlds that you pass through or phases of consciousness. Like, what is it to go through those semi-permeable membranes that allow us to rise up? From long ago, I heard the sun will come out tomorrow. I guess that's an Annie song.
Yes.
But it's necessary almost for a human to believe that this too shall pass, the sun shall rise, my broken heart will be mended, joy and a lighthearted spirit will again be mine. Because to wallow or to lay in the heaviness or the darkness or the pain of it all, it's almost too much to bear, and I do believe I've seen people who have died from broken hearts. So it's imperative, if you're somebody who wants to go on and engage life fully, to find music, to find art, to find another human being that lights a fire in us, that helps them. Helps that rose open this season here in beautiful Southern California, with all these roses coming to life in this winter time. You know, I'm from back east. I'm like, wow, look at this. This life is busting forth on us. It's amazing. In the midst of the darkness, that's when the light starts to creep back into us.
That's beautiful. Can you think of a song for us here? We're trying something different. Oh, we should have told the audience. We're
how about that?
Yes.
I don't know why I hear Whitney Houston singing "I Will Always Love You," but that's kind of sad too, because they break up.
But isn't that what we're talking about? We're talking about the human experience. You cannot feel loss unless you've felt love or the presence of. And so...
Well, that's true. Can it be much better than to have loved another and then say at the end of whatever time frame that is that you share that incredible feeling that you wish them more love as they step away from you?
Yeah.
So I guess that's really a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, I think that we've got our first song.
All right. I will always love you.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way. So I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And I will always love you.
Love is the force that will propel you to climb mountains, cross rivers, build the Taj Mahal. I mean,
yeah.
Love is the most powerful force I know of. And so I encourage people to be in love, not just in that filial state that like, ooh, baby, you're so hot, love, but the love of a sunrise or sunset, the love of a baby cooing and smiling back at us when we make that human-to-human encounter with them and they gaze upon us in a way we rarely allow another human being to look at us. We let babies kind of like study us. And to live in love is like, I guess it's a high we can't always sustain.
Right.
But boy, when it's happening to us, I guess all the things are firing off in our brain and our body is just like filled with the hormones that are working well for us. Because it's a blissful state. And despite the fact that we know it's not going to last, it's a good thing. We deserve it. And I think all of us should be open to it as often as possible.
So again, it comes to this whole thing of a state, right? I mean, so it's all very temporary. So our experiencing of the loss and grief, that's temporary too. And so what we had that we loved as we say goodbye to it, I think we always sort of think of that state as something that's going to be constant. It was with my grandmother, I never ever could imagine my life without her. She was my constant. I mean, she taught me so much. She taught me that 50 was the perfect age for a woman, because at her 50th party, she came out in a green satin dress and high heels and walked down this, you know, made this entrance like movie star into her own party. And all I could think of is, oh my God, I can't wait to be 50 because I'm going to be beautiful and sexy and all those amazing things like my grandmom. Or that the nearly to the moment that she chose her transition and her doctor even said, well, she decided to go. I heard her say to me, baby, it's going to be all right. You know, so this woman I never, ever imagined not having in my life. And I had to then go, I transitioned from her being physically in my life to her being spiritually in my life.
Now, I want to pause there, because what a incredible transition that is, right? The ability to leave a physical realm and now to be connected to somebody in a spiritual, emotional realm. And I've often looked up at the sky and felt that my grandmother was watching over me. In fact, the day I suffered, maybe the greatest loss I've ever experienced, I had a fiance that died young, and I was crying out, ran out into a field and up in the countryside, ran out into a field, and it was storming, and lightning was striking all about, and I was on my knees in this field that had been plowed, so I was down in the soil, and I stretched my arms out to the sky. I was crying and screaming, why didn't you take me, God, take me? And it felt like grandma's hands cupped my face.
Yeah.
And whispered, baby, it's going to be all right. And I stopped. I'm getting emotional. I stopped all that screaming and carrying on. I had a child. I had an 18-month or 20-month-old child to raise, and I said, I better go back in the house, take care of her. It's going to be all right. But it was grandma's hands. I guess Bill Withers sings that song about grandma's hands. But grandma had transcended the physical plane. She left me here in this earth in 1974, but here it was 1985 or 86. And she was there for me in a spiritual plane, but it seemed like she passed through that spiritual plane into this physical plane and embraced me. I don't know if it was my imagination, just my imagination. Once again, another song.
Yeah. Well, I think
she was with me.
I think we're going to play Grandma's Hands here.
In church on Sunday morning, Grandma's hand played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast, might fall on a piece of glass, might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hand. Grandma's hand soothed the local unwed mother. Grandma's hand used to ache sometimes and swell. Grandma's hand used to lift her face and tell her, she'd say, baby, Grandma, understand that you really love that man. Put yourself in Jesus' hands, Grandma's hand. To hand me a piece of candy. Grandma's hand picked me up each time I fell. Grandma's hand, boy, they really came in a handy. She'd say, Matty, don't you whip that boy. What you wanna spank him for? He didn't drop no apple core, but I don't have Grandma anymore. If I get to heaven, I'll look for Grandma.
You know, there's a presence to all of these things. There's a presence to being in the grief. There's a presence to being in loss. There's a presence to being in denial because I ain't ready for it yet. People are dealing with so much, and yet and still we pause and we stay within that psychosocial, emotional place until typically we're ready to move to a next place or next developmental phase or next reach up for higher ground. Now, it's only problematic when we get stuck and can't go further and need helping hands. And that's when music, pharmacology, doctors, psychotherapists, pastoral care people, somebody, a good friend or grandma or mama, you know, whoever that somebody is, might be grandpa for somebody, might be daddy, but whoever they are, for me, often it used to be my little girl. I raised her for 9 years by myself, and she's deaf, and she might tell you that we grew up together, and I always chide her. I say, well, sometimes I wondered who was the parent, because that little girl would tell me right from wrong, Daddy, you can't do that. Once she learned how to talk, first she'd sign it to me, no, no, you can't. And then she got the words, no. But wisdom comes out of so many places and out of the mouths of babes. It may come, and one day in New York, I was down in my luck, and I only had $5 in my pocket, and this homeless man asked me for money, and I didn't even look at him, but I walked further, and I heard him say, really, you won't help me? And I turned back and looked at him, and he looked like what I would imagine Jesus looked like in an Afrocentric frame of reference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brother had braids or dreads or something. He had an awesome face, that cheekbones and deep eyes, and handsome brother. But he had like a cloak around him, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Who is this with these piercing eyes? And I said, I don't have any money to give you. but I reached in my pocket and gave him my last $5. And he told me all would be well. Again, somewhere, somehow, some source of comfort came unto me because I gave him that $5. And don't you know, later that day, my world turned around and things did get better. This learning opportunity, these moments, flashes of wisdom or encounters with the divine that touch and help us through challenging times, Adrian, they're so available to us, and I think too many of us are so busy. We're so caught up in what's taking place that we may not open ourselves, we may not avail ourselves to the help and to the ultimate comfort that exists out there. It's an old song, "Comfort Me, O My Soul." And these things are out there, and it doesn't have to come through the way Grandma did it or the way the Pope does it or the way the Buddha does it. It could come through the organic source of life that is you. The energy's here for all of us. We just have to be open for it and let the comfort come. You know, so yeah. I don't know what song we're going to get for comfort, but it could be any song that makes you feel good, right? Because that's ultimately it. What's your happy music? Everybody's got some different happy music.
I love the happy song.
That is a wonderful song. I think I had it on my phone, the last phone I had. You know what one I was able to teach my deaf daughter? I taught her that song. I bet you we were kids when this thing came out. Sing a song.
Oh, yes.
Make it simple to last your whole life long. I can't sing. But they said, don't worry that it's not good enough for anyone else to hear.
Yes.
Right? And yeah. I taught her to assign that to her, and she would be down and out, and I'd say, sing a song, and she starts signing that and going la 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 la. I said, go on, girl.
Sing a song, sing out loud, sing out strong, sing of good things, not bad. Sing happy, not sad. Sing a song. Make it simple to last your whole life long. Don't worry that it's not good enough for anyone else to hear. Just sing a song.
La 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 la
Curtis Mayfield had a song. So I had two thoughts about this. One, as I was watching the news and they were going on and on about the opioid epidemic, and it made me think of Curtis Mayfield's song about Fred is dead.
And Fred is dead, that's right.
Well, and it's the story, right, of a black man who's died from a drug overdose, and people really don't care. And with the opioid epidemic, all of a sudden we're getting all this attention about people dying and the street drugs and overuse of drugs, and it's only because now white children are dying. Now, nobody wants them to die. This is awful and terrible, and yes, something should be done about it. But the fact that now it's being called an epidemic has to do with the profile, I guess, of those people who are dying from it now. And I thought about that song. I thought, here we were, I don't know how many years ago, our culture was pointing to these things happening, and they fell on deaf ears. I think somehow we have to put in what's going on, because we're kind of here with our political thing here.
It ties it all together, and he's saying that so long ago now, and yet we're still in that place. You know, as you were talking about the drug crisis that's with us and has always been a part of America, because alcohol is a drug, and
absolutely,
this is one alcohol drugged out nation. In fact, I never seen so much booze available like you all have it here in California. It's in your drug stores,
it's
everywhere. In the supermarkets. I mean, we just got liquor stores in New York, but y'all got liquor everywhere. And I'm like, wow, the crises that is human beings in need of separating from the reality of their own life experience is profound. It takes over too many lives. And it's so sad. I was thinking about Billie Holiday and her losing her life young, or younger than she should have, succumbing to heroin.
Yes.
And it was through her love of her man that she got introduced to the drug, and then she becomes such a horrible drug addict. It's hard. It's a deep sadness that allows human beings to seek comfort in something that's not permanent, but merely for a moment. Let's say it's for a moment, whether your high is an hour or 3 hours or half a day, because the issues that you're confronted with are waiting for you on the other side. Again, I'll harken back to building spiritual repertoire, having the resources of spoken word, written word, music, touch therapies, humans, friends, grandmas, mental health professionals, clergy of any variety, but developing a bag or a toolkit that can sustain you in the midst of brokenheartedness, of grief, of bereavement, of sorrow, of melancholia. Really, it's imperative. We should have it in school for our children. Teach them from an early age to build yourself a bag of tricks or a bag of resources.
Resilience.
That will get you, yes, a resilience tool bag, backpack, because you're going to need it.
Let the man rap a plan, said he'd send him home. But his hope was a rope, and he should have known. Everybody's misused him, ripped him off and abused him. Another junkie plan, pushing dope for the man. A terrible blow, but that's how it goes. Freddy's on the corner now. If you wanna be a junkie, wow.
Remember, Fred is dead. We're all built up with progress, but sometimes I must confess, we can deal with rockets and dreams, but reality, what does it mean? Ain't nothing said. Cause Fred is dead.
Break. This is Access Advocacy. We're speaking with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on thepowerofvoices.com. Good afternoon. This is Adrienne Shapiro of Access Advocacy. And today we're going to have a very special conversation with Reverend Gordon C. Bailey of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Verdugo Hills. When you were talking about the homeless guy, I went back, and when you were talking about what you saw, it made me think of Matthew 25. I was trying to remember it because, when my grandmother came to California at 13 years of age, she joined a church on Central Avenue, and then all her babies went there, and so all of us went there, and, it was really a Southern Baptist church, and so we had to memorize the entire Bible. And all right. When I was 5 years old, we went to Sunday school, and my grandmother came, and she looked at me and put her hand out, and she said, "Come with me. They ain't never going to let you back in Sunday school." I was always, "Well, why and how come and what if and then what?" all my life. So, but I do remember them talking about Matthew 25, and there's a thing about getting your reward in heaven. And you're getting your reward in heaven for what you do on earth. He gives to the meek person, the blessed people, the inheritance is the kingdom which he's prepared. And he says, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was a stranger, you invited me in. I needed clothes, you clothed me. When I was sick, you looked at me." And the righteous said, "No, well, Lord, when did I see you? When did I feed you? What do you, when did I give you something to drink?" And the response is, "When you gave a drink to a stranger, or you invited a stranger in, when you fed the hungry, when you took care of a sick person, when you did for, what is it, the word that, if the least of these, right?
The least of these. The
least
of these. That's the Sermon on the Mount. That's the most important sermon in the Christian world. I believe in all of Western theology, because it requires that we take care of one another, and the, whoever it is, the highest or the lowest.
Yeah, I think in these harsh times and scary times, we have to be mindful of that. You know, when we study things from an intellectual way, you look at the situation and we say, we in our community, we are so stressed. We're in many ways looking at whatever social net was in place to help those of us who may come upon hard times. Those things are going to go away. We have our neighborhoods through our cultural base. We're being disbanded. All of these things are happening. And yet, almost all of us, when we drive down the streets, at least here in Southern California, you're looking at people who are literally living on the streets or living in their cars. And we have to be mindful in those moments of what we have and of our responsibility to somehow dig deep and in some way help. Because as you know, your experience, here you were, you gave this person your last. I actually gave a homeless guy my last dollar. It was too funny. He said to me, and he was kind of, you know, kind of cocky. He was a brother. He had his Mac Daddy thing going on, you know. He said something, and I said hello, and then he said something, and I said thank you. And he said, oh, you can thank me by giving me some money when you come out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what he said to me. So I was like, okay, that's fine. I think he asked me about where I'd parked, if I'd remembered to put money in my meter. All right, so he had his thing going on. You know, he had his hustle. And I'm respectful of the hustle. So Ron doesn't let me carry around much cash because I'm subject to give it all away, which is true. Spend it or give it away. So I go in and I come back out of the shop and he's there. He's not in the same spot, but he's moved to a different spot. So I go over to him and I give him a dollar. So he looks at me and he says, oh, so you can go tell your friends that you gave a homeless man a dollar. So I looked at him and I said, no, I can tell my friends that I gave a homeless man a dollar and it was every penny I had on me. And he just looked at me. You know, the whole thing changed. It really literally was. I might have had like 9 pennies in my glove compartment, but literally it was every cent I have. It was everything I had to give him. I had some, you know, I generally carry water around that I can give bottles of water around away. And my girlfriend was like, you should go ask him for your dollar back. And I'm like, no, because that was my gift. That was everything I had to give him. And then that was it. But back to Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. We have to be generous of spirit. And I think when you're generous of spirit, from that I got a really funny story. I got this story about this guy, you know, and it made me feel good to give him every cent I had, even if he was ungrateful for it. For me, it was, this is here, I'm giving you what I have. And the giving is not, it doesn't have to be appreciated or anything like that, right? Because the giving from you is in the reason for that is that in generosity of spirit, I think that whole thing of opening the hand. So if I open the hand to give, I am also opening the hand to receive whatever is there in spirit or physical or, now I'm back to my grandmother. Because she used to say to me all the time, you have to assume the position. And the position was a bowed head with both palms extended. You know, the open palms. And she'd say, you can't receive anything if you aren't giving anything away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about that?
I know.
That's kind of profound.
Yeah, yeah. If your fist is closed, you can't receive anything. Well, this has been interesting.
It takes us to a point where this is about a symbiotic relationship. This is about our Unitarian Universalist first principle of inherent worth and dignity, and what's required to make sure that somebody has dignity is that they're clothed, they're fed, they're housed. I'm okay, you're okay. It's about doing it to the least of these, and sometimes I'm the least of these because I'm down on my luck, and sometimes somebody else is, and we're going to give them what they need. Meeting the needs of other human beings is, it seems difficult in this modern world where a phone can cost $700 or whatever. People line up to get the first phones, but really and truly, I love this song Hezekiah Walker has that says, I need you to survive, you know? He's just telling us, I need you. We're all part of this same God's kingdom together. Stand with me. Agree with me. We're all part of the body of this earth, God's earth, and that every need can be supplied if we just hold each other as important. And so that's critically valuable knowledge when so many won't be happy. And we got to take the time to knock on a door or to look over at somebody in traffic and give them a smile and a nod or just cheer somebody on. Because, you know, it's rough out here sometimes. From Hezekiah Walker, he says, I pray for you, you pray for me. I love you, I need you to survive. Sister Adrian, those are words, I think, to live by.
Everybody look at somebody and tell them, I need you.
I need you.
You need me.
You need me.
We're all a part.
We're all a part of God's body.
Stand with me.
Stand with me.
Look at somebody, tell them, agree with me.
Agree with me.
We're all a part.
We're all a part of God's body.
It is His will.
Words from
clap your hands, everybody.
Well, I think that's a great way for us to bring in 2018.
There's a new beginning.
That's a new beginning.
And so we can write the narrative of our heart's desire if we will be willing to step into it. Be not afraid.
Be not afraid. Well, I want to thank you once again. This is my favorite Rev.
Well, you are one of my favorite people, and I'm so glad you are in my life and my family's life. And listen now, you told me something about if I need a room, so I'm going to be calling you.
Hey, we've got room.
All right. All right, in that blessed kingdom where you reside. So peace and love to you and yours and all the listeners.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom and your guidance and your musical selections.
Hey, listen, my dear, ain't no sunshine when you're gone. I'm staying on the Brother Withers, and we got to get together again soon. So please invite me back.
You take care. Say hi to Lisa.
You too.
Okay.
Lots of love.
Okay,
bye-bye.
You too. Bye. We'll return in a minute with more Access Advocacy on the Power of Voices. We're just about out of time, but before we go, I wanted to let you know that you can learn more about our organization on our website, accessadvocacy.org, or on the Access Advocacy Facebook page. That's axisadvocacy.org. Join us again next Tuesday on thepowerofvoices.com at noon Pacific, or listen anytime on demand at accessadvocacy.org. You'll find all our programs there. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. Thank you for listening.
Worship, worship.